Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Akev. This week, Rabbi Mike Feher discusses Akev. Rabbi Mike Feher is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Mike Feher.
What exactly lies between awe and fear? If you were here with me now, I'd give you the visual. Throw the hands over the head, cower in fear before that which is larger than me, or toss them back and stand wide-eyed in awe as the narrow, comfortable horizons within which I live are torn away in the face that which is larger than me. You know, there's nothing actually better than hanging 1,000 feet up on a cliff to offer you both that fear rooted in the frailty of being and the awesomeness of such an experience. And in our parsha, Parshat Ekev, Moshe tells us exactly what God wants, and it's yira, a word which could mean either awe or fear. Now, Israel, what exactly does the Lord your God ask of you? Only this. Lira, to yira, let's leave it untranslated now. The Lord your God, to walk in his path, love him, serve the Lord your God with all your heart and soul. Now this is big, but it's also quite strange to say that only this God asks. I mean, we've heard literally hundreds of commandments up till now. So what exactly is Moshe Rabbeinu trying to teach us? I think in order to get at that, we've got to touch at least briefly on the roots of yira. Where exactly in our story does it begin? And he said, I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid, because I'm naked, so I hid. This, of course, is Adam, the first human being's answer to Ayeka. Where are you? And I can't help but say that Ayeka, of course, can also be read as Eicha. And it, therefore, is a question whose relevance echoes down through history to our very day, in which we brought up in such a sharp manner only a couple weeks ago on the 9th of Av. Echa yashva badad. How does the city sit alone? This question really could be heard as rhetorical. Oh, how does the city sit alone? Or we could take it at face value. How did we get here? And by implication in such a question, how do we fix what we've broken? And I believe in the same way we can understand Adam's response, I was naked, I'm afraid, as meaning he was naked in the literal sense, right? In which case, when he looked down and suddenly came to consciousness, he was like a toddler that woke up to being, right? Which can be quite scary. Or we could see this nakedness as expressive of his awareness that he lacks any excuse in that moment to hold up between himself and his behavior. All the veils are gone. He's naked of rationalizations. A place, I think, that we'd all find quite frightening. But in that, he had an opportunity, an awesome chance, to face the truth of his imperfection. But he wasn't going to do it alone. It was before God. And just imagine, what if Adam had stood there before God in this moment and said, awesome, here I am. As Avram, by the way, is going to do 20 generations later when he says, Hineni. I hid because I failed you. I failed you. I failed myself. I have nothing else to say. My question is, at that point, would there still have even been a sin? Or would Adam's assertion have laid down for us a sort of existential precursor to Yom Kippur? You know, Yom Kippur is coming up, and it is the awesome day of the Lord. And it's also the one day a year that we all turn toward God and say, you have to forgive us, because it's all your fault. That's right. On that day, we don't eat. We don't engage in physical intimacy. We dress in white and pray all day. What are we doing? We're showing God, see, if we were angels, we wouldn't fail you. But hey, what am I supposed to do? You made me this way. I gotta eat. I gotta work. I got needs. So you have to accept me as I am. It's all your fault, God. Even though, by the way, the rest of the year, it's on me. So what if the awesome potential of that moment had filled Adam with awe instead of fear? all at the breadth of the relationship with the divine that was available through his first expression of independence and then his owning of its consequences. What if he'd done that rather than collapsing into fear and the instinct to hide? That bears reflection, I think, in all our relationships. But unfortunately, we know how the story goes. Instead, he blames Eve, right? And a moment of ingratitude, which in my mind is actually his sin, or at the very least, the true expression of it. And we all know how the story goes from there. But here we are in our Parsha, many years later, with another chance. And now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God demand of you? Ki'im, except only this. And on that, and now, by the way, Rashi adds a telling point. Even though you did all this, Odeno Rachamav v'chibota alechem. Right? His compassion and love is still with you. Umikoma shechatatem v'fanav. Eino shoyal michem ki'im v'ira. And despite all the sins that you've done before him, he's only asking you, li'ira. Is that to fear or to stand in awe? One thing is clear to Rashi, that our failures are not what matters. They don't define our relationship. And in fact, even seemingly success and the mitzvot aren't the goal of what the Torah is leading us toward. How could that be? You know, the sages say in the Gemara in Brachot, everything is in the hand of heaven except the fear of heaven. Yirat Shamayim, the awe of heaven. As it says, and now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God demand of you? Only this, to fear the Lord your God. There's our pasuk. How could the sages say that everything was in God's hands, except for this? You know, the assumption of free will is a foundational element of the human experience in our day. And yet, there are so many definitive realms in which it's not a question of free will. We weren't even given a choice. Our birth gender, our race, our social class, our education, our endocrine system, and the things in life that happen to us so often every day. There's no choice there, and therefore no realm for free will. So what are the sages telling us? They're saying that all life is in the service of something. As a wise Jew once said, everybody gotta serve somebody. And furthermore, not only is life in service of some thing, and that's just another relationship in our life. Rather, that service becomes the context for all that we do. And it is therefore definitional to not only what we do, but who we are. And by the way, this is another root, to touch it briefly, of the Yira in our Torah. Because if you look at the binding of Isaac, you'll find that the word Yira and Yireh, the word awe or fear, and the word will see, are written in the exact same way. They're just vocalized differently. And there's a powerful interplay between seeing and standing in awe in that whole story of the binding of Isaac, which tells us that really what it means to have Yirat Shamayim is to know that you're seen. And in fact, sometimes even to see. So when the sages say that everything is in the hands of heaven except for the fear of heaven, what they're really saying to us is that our choice, our freedom in life lies in whom we serve, and furthermore, in how that teaches us to know the world. Because life is made up of successes, failures, sins, commandments, mitzvot, good deeds, bad deeds, I don't know what. The real question is what's the context for all of those actions? And as I contemplate what it is I actually get to choose out of my life, we can return to that original question. If what I choose is Yirat Shamayim, is it a context of shrinking in fear before the larger, unbearable nature of being? Or is it the removal of those narrow horizons and a standing in awe before the breadth of existence?
Thank you, Rabbi Scherer. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.